You know something's fishy when rich people get arrested, but they don't go to jail, like those princes and elite officials who were detained allegedly for corruption in Saudi Arabia. They're being held at a five-star hotel. But since the Saudi kingdom is such a mysterious place, we're not sure what it means or how it's connected to this.
The Houthis said that they lobbed a missile towards Riyadh's main international airport. The Saudi-led coalition said it intercepted the missile. And then in response to the attack, they closed off all entry points to Yemen, land, sea, air. Nothing was going in or out.
More on that mysterious missile in a moment. First, back to those arrests. Robert Worth covers the Middle East for The New York Times. So the Ritz-Carlton, Trump has stayed there. Obama has stayed there. Have you been there?
Yes, I have, only briefly.
And at this point, would you say it's fair to call this hotel the most luxurious prison on earth?
I think that's fair enough, yes.
I mean, it is pretty wild, as I read some of the reports, how this all happened, because there were guests there, right, with reservations who were already booked into the hotel.
Yeah, exactly. And my understanding is that people were essentially kicked out the way that they used to kick people out of a restaurant in Little Italy in New York when the mob decided to have a meeting there.
So you've spent some time in Saudi Arabia. If a five-star hotel is suddenly turned into a prison, what does this say to Saudis who are looking from the outside in?
Well, I think a lot of people are actually quite excited about Mohammed bin Salman, and so they're willing to give him some latitude on this. On the one hand, sure, there's concern in Saudi Arabia and outside about the fact that there's no legal basis for these arrests. On the other hand, people know that what Mohammed bin Salman essentially wants to do is liberalize his economy. It's very, very ambitious ideas about how to do that economically and socially. And he thinks that to do that, he needs all the levers of power. So he's preemptively arresting all these people to cut off potential challengers.
Right. And just a reminder that Mohammed bin Salman is the crown prince and is basically on track to become king of Saudi Arabia. I mean, all of this leaves a lot to the imagination. I was looking at the Ritz-Carlton Riyadh website. They've got a fancy bowling alley, really a lot of dining options, not to mention the rooms. Do you have any details on what life is like for these detainees right now?
I really don't. I mean, one can imagine, you know, that it's very much a golden cage. I mean, I don't think they're making anybody feel uncomfortable. The real question is, who is talking to them and what are they saying? You know, one of the things that many, many ordinary Saudis will complain about is that you have a kind of a two-tier system of citizenship there, where if you are a royal or you're connected to the royals, you have sweetheart deals of all different kinds, and ordinary people don't have that kind of access. What the Mohammed bin Salman, who is, you know, de facto king of Saudi Arabia at this point, has in mind is to disenfranchise at some point large parts of the royal family to get back to a system that's much more like what you have in the other Gulf states like the Emirates.
I mean, there are interrogations going on of these detainees. Do you have any sense at all what they might be getting asked? And do you really believe this is ultimately about corruption, cracking down on corruption?
No, I think corruption is a convenient pretext here. I think most people believe that this is ultimately about consolidation of power. Certainly, you know, corruption goes on within that set, but corruption is a charge that can be laid at the feet of almost everybody in that high position in that country, a corruption of some kind or other. I think the real question is, to what extent will these people continue to play a role and under what kinds of rules? And that's where this gets risky. You know, at some point, he's going to have to let them out of the Ritz-Carlton. They can't.
Mohammed bin Salman.
Exactly. They're going to have to be released. And then what will happen to them? You know, we can't really keep them all under house arrest. How are you going to cut back considerably on these people's power and potentially also expropriate a lot of their money, particularly in the case of Al-Walid bin Talal, the billionaire, who is the best known of those people, who is at the Ritz-Carlton now, who, you know, is known for his ownership and stakes in Twitter and other big companies. What's his life going to be like going forward? Nobody knows.
Why would Saudi Arabia essentially arrest people on sort of this corruption crackdown and then hold them in a fancy hotel? If you want to send a message to allegedly corrupt people, why not throw them in jail?
So corruption is a pretext here for an effort to change the entire system. What exactly are they going to do to change that system, and how quickly are they going to change it? Nobody has the answers to these questions. One of the most interesting questions now revolving about all this is that very recently, Jared Kushner was in Riyadh, apparently talking with Mohammed bin Salman until 4 in the morning, according to a column by David Ignatius in the Washington Post. What were they talking about? You know, was Kushner part of the plans to make this all happen? After all, we have to remember that this is only the domestic side of the equation we're talking about. At the same time, the leaders of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman in particular, have ideas for changing its foreign relations. And particularly, he's taking a much more aggressive line on Iran. You have to assume that that's also part of what he was discussing late at night with Kushner. And we don't know where that's going to lead.
Robert Wirth, The New York Times, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure.
In 2015, Mohammed bin Salman, before he was the crown prince, his very first job for the kingdom, Saudi Minister of Defense, and his first military mission was to be a lightning-quick operation in neighboring Yemen. The objective was to root out a group of Shia rebels who had taken over the country with the help of, and this next part is really important, with the help of Iran. 32 months later, Saudi Arabia is still trying to root out the rebels. They're known as the Houthis. And this past weekend, the Houthis lobbed a missile all the way to the Saudi capital. Here to explain what that missile strike is all about is Christine Beckerle of Human Rights Watch. So tell us what happened on Saturday exactly, if you would, Christine.
So what happened was the Houthis said that they lobbed a missile, basically, as you said, towards Riyadh, towards Riyadh's main international airport. Now, the problem with that is directly or trying to target a civilian target, as the airport is likely a war crime. But what happened afterwards was the Saudi-led coalition said it intercepted the missile, that there were no casualties reported. And then in response to the attack, they closed off all entry points to Yemen. So that means land, sea, air, nothing was going in or out. And the reason this is problematic is as the war has continued since 2015, the humanitarian crisis has also devolved further and further and further. And part of the reason are previous coalition restrictions on the entry of aid and the movement of people and goods. And so the movement over the weekend, the retaliation by the coalition for the Houthi missile attack is very likely to have an extremely disproportionate impact on Yemeni civilians, which would also be in violation of the laws of war.
Now, the Saudis are calling this missile an Iranian missile. Was the missile made by Iran? What is the connection between the missile and Iran?
So we've heard Saudi claims for, you know, more than 2 years about the Iranians smuggling weapons to the Houthis and the Houthis, according to the Saudis, being Iranian proxies. But I think the jury's basically still out on how much support Iran is or is not giving to the Houthis. In terms of the missile itself, all we know is what the Houthis said it was and what the Saudis then say they determined based upon what they say were remnants that they examined inside Saudi. So Saudi says, okay, this is an Iranian missile. Then the Iranians and the Houthis both deny that fact. And we also know that before the war and that the Houthis are heavily armed because they were able to seize stockpiles from the Yemeni army. So where this missile actually came from, whether or not Iran had any role in this attack is really a question mark. Now, we know that Iran has given some support to the Houthis, but that's a far cry from saying that the Houthis are Iranian proxies or that the Iranians are directly responsible for this latest attack.
Your organization, Human Rights Watch, says this is a possible war crime. Why?
Retaliation against civilians is prohibited, right? So it is true, yes, that the Saudi-led coalition has carried out scores of unlawful attacks on Yemen, including killing many, many Yemeni civilians. But that does not justify the Houthis launching a missile at a civilian target in Saudi and endangering Saudi civilian lives.
And Christine, finally, we were just talking on the show about the Saudi princes and business leaders in detention at the Ritz-Carlton Riyadh. Do you see a connection between the missile launched at Riyadh and this alleged corruption crackdown in the kingdom?
I think basically the connection that's pretty clear is Mohammed bin Salman, right? So Mohammed bin Salman has been consolidating power in Saudi at a rapid rate. What he's also done sort of in addition to his pretty big internal moves is these, in what I would consider in some cases, reckless foreign policy moves where you have this kind of belligerent language about Iran or Lebanon or Yemen or the Houthis or whoever it is tied to these sort of big internal domestic shakeups. But the kind of linking factor between both the domestic policies and the foreign policy decisions from Yemen to Qatar is this absolute failure to factor in or potentially to really care about what those policies mean for civilians, be they Saudi civilians or Yemeni civilians. And so I'm watching what's going on in the region over the last couple of days with extreme alarm because we've seen already these moves, if you just look at Yemen, that have had, you know, devastating impacts. And you haven't seen a pushback from countries like the US or the UK. And so after this weekend, you have Donald Trump tweeting that he's, you know, supporting the Crown Prince and King Salman in terms of their latest moves internally in Saudi. And I'm sitting here wondering when, if ever, the US or the UK are going to come out and say something along the lines of, we're very concerned about the recent attacks on Yemeni civilians by coalition airstrikes, or we're very concerned that the Saudi-led coalition is likely going to severely worsen the humanitarian crisis by closing off all access to Yemen. But instead, what we see is sort of blind support for Mohammed bin Salman's domestic and foreign policy decisions. And what that has meant is that the impact that they have had on civilians have not only continued, but gotten worse.
Christine Beckerle of Human Rights Watch, thanks very much for your time and your thoughts.
Thank you.